We're live. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. I'm here with Edward Cohen from Tangent, but also from the leak detection space with Pro. Say it again.
Pro Sentry.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Pro Sentry's leak detection software, which is an exciting conversation to talk about in this context of getting to Hell Yes. Given that, you know, leak detection is something that we've all heard of it. We've probably heard about. We've probably been around it. Obviously, water creates catastrophic damages inside buildings, but not everybody chooses to prioritize solving it. And so hopefully this conversation, we're going to kind of navigate around when people are looking to solve this problem and why, and digging a little bit further on kind of your experience, especially given your host with Tangent PropTech and the conversations you've been having all around the PropTech side of things. So that's exciting. I'm excited for that. So everyone listening today, getting to Hell Yes, if this is your first time listening, it's about trying to understand how, as buyers, we can begin to find the customers that are seeking to commit to change. And they've typically already prioritized the problem. And they may have prioritized it because of education, because of a peer, because of something else. But in all cases, they're seeking to understand a new way of doing something that they didn't have to do that before. So something has happened in their life or their world that they need to adjust, because as humans, we don't like adjusting. We need to dig in that conversation. Brought to you by IRCX. IRCX is AI remote maintenance software for the property management industry. We help you take a look at the problem before you roll a truck, saving you time on triage, saving you time on trips, you know, improving all your maintenance experiences. So like we always start out with, Edward, mucho gusto, gracias a juntarnos. He's a fellow Latin speaker or Spanish speaker. Tell us a little bit about your background. How did you live in this role? And really, I'd love to hear both about Tangent and in the leak detection business, and we'll go from there.
Thank you for having me, Guillermo. It's my first official LinkedIn Live, so
honored
to be here. Quickly about me, I've been in the real estate industry since 2016, held a number of roles, including within partnership, sales, biz dev, and media for companies like Neighbor.com, the peer-to-peer storage marketplace backed by A16Z, Cape Analytics, the AI-powered property intelligence for real estate investors and insurance, as well as Traded, the commercial real estate media community, and now with ProSentry, the all-in-one risk mitigation as a service for buildings. I came across this role at ProSentry while I was doing my typical industry research. And I came across New York City's local law 157, which is the gas detection law. I Googled it, never heard of it. And the first result was ProSentry, this company that I wasn't familiar with, but they were clearly the authority on the law that impacts virtually every single apartment in New York City. And they were showing up as the first result on Google for a law that not many of my peers seem to know about. So after doing a little more digging, meeting the team, realized the potential was that not only to address the local law 157 gas detection law, but the greater world of water leak detection and the potential when it comes to insurance discounts.
And how do you, like, folks that are looking to solve this problem, like, at which point do they realize that they need to do something? Like, what prompts them to figure out, I even need to search for a solution here? And then again, there's been lots of leak detection stuff, but now gas and water. Is it unique to New York, or is it other jurisdictions of the same problem?
Great questions. So a couple of main problems here. So first is lowering the risk of gas shutdowns with New York City's local law 157. So quick background, just the law came out last year and requires all residential buildings in New York City with gas appliances to have a natural gas detector. It looks something like this.
Okay.
So we, ProSentry, partner with a leading natural gas detector manufacturer out of Japan to bring to market the only local law 157 compliant gas detector. Which reduces the risk of a gas shutdown, which is a huge problem. Anyone that has had their gas service shut down can attest to this. You know, it can take months to restart the gas. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, you are living without gas. Big problem for property managers, owners, and everyone involved.
And where's the shutoff? Just so that unit looks that your hardware there looks like unit specific. Is it unit level or is it building level?
It's every single gas appliance needs to have one of these. So basically every apartment in New York City needs to have one. Gas stoves, gas-powered dryers, even the boiler rooms.
Yeah.
So this is a huge impact for every owner and operator of residentially used buildings in New York City. But just for context, to put some numbers to it, just this February, a 300-unit building in Yonkers had a big gas leak, and the building ended up deciding to convert everything to electric, which was cheaper than solving and finding the gas leak. And they're having to spend over $18 million just to convert to electric, which is, you know, impossible for most buildings out there.
Well, because that's like, that's billing, that's utility management, that's contracting, that's infrastructure, that's amperage, that's panels, that's appliances, that's everything.
Absolutely. It's, you know, something that I wouldn't wish it upon my worst enemy, but, you know, buildings, especially in New York City, aren't getting newer. So you have to, you know, comply with the law, but also make sure that you choose the safest option. Mm-hmm. So buildings have two options to comply with. One is a basic unmonitored gas detector, and the other one is this one, which is the smart monitored mm-hmm. gas detector.
What if they don't do it? What if they just ignore it?
That's a question that everyone's been wondering. Fines haven't been announced yet, so mm-hmm. everyone's waiting for that. You know, the stick. However, it's, you know, we're talking about gas, and the origins of the law is to safeguard lives of firefighters, mm-hmm. residents, and building staff after a couple of tragic explosions in Manhattan in 2014 and 2015. So, you know, most people that I've spoken with are planning to comply or have complied already. The deadline was May 1st. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things that...
For context, how many apartment units in New York City? And it's New York State or is it New York City?
New York City, the five boroughs. Well, it depends who you ask, because even the official data that are supposed to be keeping track of how many apartments we have in New York City don't even agree. But, you know, it's in the millions. It could be 4 to 5 million apartments, mm-hmm. Plus minus.
Okay. So we've got a solution to a pre-existing problem that everyone has to comply with, but there's no punishment for not, well, there's no litigation yet around this, the problem. So people need to buy this, you know, it's a risk mitigation, but they need to figure out to commit to change or to invest in this based on the probably a non-compliance thing. So has insurance come to play?
So insurance comes to play, especially for water leak detection.
Yeah.
Before we move on to water, just for clarity, if you have a gas leak currently in New York City and something happens, you know, either they shut down your gas to the building because someone called 911, they couldn't find the leak, or mm-hmm. because, you know, something worse happened, gas accumulation, explosion, then there's clearly going to be some liability involved. Now, I'm not a lawyer here, but if there's a law that says that you should have a gas sensor and then something happens and you don't have that sensor, then, you know, no one's willing to take that risk. However, to your question, insurance. Now, one of the dirty little secrets of real estate technology is that buildings, owners, managers, we are incentivized to innovate when external forces incentivizes us to. In this case, there's been regulation, but with insurance, lowering the risk of a building by being able to catch water leaks as soon as they start is critical for insurance.
Yeah.
So not sure if many know this, but non-weather water is the number one reason for insurance claims. Number one or number two, depends who you ask and depends what state. But number one, number two, non-weather related, right? Everyone hears about hurricanes. Everyone hears about natural disasters. But we're talking here about your casual leaks inside apartments, bathroom, fixtures, appliances in the kitchen, your AC units, your washing machines, your mechanical rooms. Insurance companies don't want to pay for water claims anymore. They know there's technology out there that can make buildings fundamentally less risky to insure.
Right.
And that's where we come in.
And so given you guys the gas solution, so is there an insurance play there?
For gas, we haven't noticed an insurance prioritization there.
Yeah.
But the beauty of ProCentury is that it's all under one roof, all under one system.
Totally.
So you can have, this is, for example, a water leak detector. This is a 10-year battery-powered water leak detector that is all integrated with the required gas detector.
Gotcha.
So either one that goes into the building, we notify building staff as soon as there's a gas leak or as soon as there's a water leak, and we can relate exactly where the leak is happening, unit number, the appliance or location, so that the building staff can address it immediately before it ends up in an insurance claim. For example, last year, we caught over 3,600 leaks in New York City, and none of them resulted in an insurance claim.
Well, that's a pretty good number. So 3,600 leaks, and then on a deployment basis, how many units that be deployed?
We have several hundred buildings deployed, and it's, you know, something that...
Like, is it 36% or 30? Is it 3.6? I mean, 3.6% is still huge for gas leak.
Yeah, talking about water here, but yeah, right. Gas. Yeah, the gas law went into effect literally May 1st.
Okay.
We do. Yeah, we do have a 75 unit client in Midtown Manhattan that lowered its insurance premium by $300,000 after adding ProCentury's water leak detection system. So, you know, it's something that every building is different depending their history of leaks, but they all see benefits in lower repair costs and ultimately insurance, lower insurance risk.
Yeah, the water industry, the leak detection, well, I mean, I'll say insurance prevention play, right, is extremely compelling, especially when the insurance companies get involved. Now, I'm curious, like, do you ever, when you talk about this is the getting hell yes piece, like from a distribution perspective, you're probably out there actively, you know, in direct sales. Is there a play from a distribution channel perspective with an insurance company? Can you be an affiliate? Does that work? Is that compliant?
That's a great question. I'll have to consult with my legal team on this.
So
insurance are actively trying to push for ways to make buildings less risky, right?
Yeah.
That, again, means addressing water because it's the number one reason for non-weather water-related claims. So, yes, there are discounts. Every insurance is treating it a little differently, but major insurance companies, especially for residential buildings, are providing either discounts or lower increases when they come to renew their policy. A resort casino in Atlantic City had a major leak that, you know, went into the elevators, reached the garage. Their insurance was going to increase by $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then they installed a little over $70,000 worth of water leak detection, temperature and boiler monitoring from ProCentury. And they were able to renew at a, you know, at a normal increase, and they waived the $5 million. So every insurance is a little different. Every building is a little different, but yes.
So let's get into like the conversation around hell yeah. So like, why would someone prioritize? And let's consolidate the conversation for gas and water into like basically defensive position around insurance. What would go on in someone's life as a property manager? Actually, first question, do you sell to property managers or owners?
Yeah, so the beauty of ProCentury is that we bring value to the stakeholders across the chain, starting with the managers, both property manager and resident managers, as well as the building owners or condo and co-op boards, and ultimately the asset managers as well, investors, but also the insurance brokers. So all the above we sell to and we work with because they all see benefits from mitigating risk.
Do they all have decision authority on implementing this kind of thing?
So it depends whether you're in New York City or outside New York City. I mean, right. In New York City, I would say there are some property and resident managers that have more decision-making power than the board members themselves.
Right.
Other owners and operators, whether they're vertically integrated or not, then they may have more decision on the operation side or more decision on the finance side. So it really depends.
Okay. And so then, given that you've got to navigate the decision rights around implementation, because it's going to be case by case, how do you figure out the motivations for change with respect to implementing a leak detection solution? Like, what is it? I mean, is it after the insurance claim? Like, when is it usually they start thinking that they got to make this change the way they do things?
Yep. It's there's key moments throughout the year that, you know, our clients may be more inclined to consider or to solve the problem at hand. If they just had a leak, if they are having an insurance renewal conversation, mm-hmm. where their insurance premiums going up, deductibles going up, or they heard that the neighbor just got it, you know, there's still a big FOMO effect within our industry, especially in high, you know, more densely populated cities. It really depends.
Well, and presumably, like, so how often do insurance policies come up for renewal? Like, how often can a property manager materially impact the insurance fees by implementing or recommending something like this?
For residential, typically it's once a year.
Yeah.
But if something happens throughout the year, there's also seasonal impacts. For example, now summer is usually the time of the year where there are more like leaks due to condensation in places that get, you know, really hot. So our leak detection sensors, our leak sensors have temperature and humidity detection as well included. Had a client last December that, you know, one of the residents, there was a warm day in the winter, forgot the window open, left to Florida. And then the resident manager received a notification, the temperature inside unit 21J dropped below 50 degrees. Run upstairs, close the window before you get frozen pipes.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are in plan, but those happen when you least expect it, right? Your water leaking Christmas Eve, you know, someone forgetting the window open. So, there are moments that arise throughout the year that, you know, create sense of urgency.
How do you filter on that? Like, how do you go, like, here's what I'm thinking. Like, I'm thinking that when a building is refinanced, which is publicly available information, then they typically have to get maybe a new insurance inspection, and then they could have a material impact on that. Or is it just annual renewal of insurance policies that, hey, if I install, you know, your point about $300,000, I can save $300,000 on insurance, which is a material impact on a cap rate and then ultimately on a cap rate basis. And then, you know, my investment is really inconsequential relative to the savings and the cap rate and hit, but still, not everybody does it. So why doesn't everybody do it?
I think understanding timelines of, you know, holding periods is important, especially when talking about commercial real estate. If someone bought a building and they were planning to hold on to it for 7 years and they're in their fifth year, you know, are they going to dramatically invest in something that is going to, like, you know, have the, you know, limit the chances of them selling that asset within the time frame, for example. So understanding that, especially with commercial real estate, is very critical.
Well, and you see the same thing in residential, right? If an owner's got a short hold period, they're going to be inclined to maximize the overall value of that asset. And so they're going to be focused on whatever they can to give them a quick return on ROI. And I guess that would only be impactful if they could meaningfully change the value of that insurance policy.
Right, which is something that we're seeing more and more. Again, insurance companies don't want to pay for water claims anymore. They happen more frequently than ever. And it's something that we now have the technology to make sure that these, you know, buildings and residents stay insured, right? Because there's also buildings that are entering this quote unquote sick building list that now they are uninsurable. Like, you know, that's definitely an urgent moment, but it's about just making sure that you're keeping your building future proof.
Is there a particular vintage of buildings that you can kind of like guess that, okay, this one's got copper piping, this one's got poly piping, this has got PEX piping. And then at that point, you can kind of like guess that they have a leaking problem.
There are more leaky AC units than others, but you know, it's all about how they've been used, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about a car, it can be the same vintage, same car, but if they had drastically different driving patterns from the driver, that car is going to be very different. So same with a building.
Yeah. But when you're going to market, like in terms of the, like you're right in terms of the probability of it occurring, but when you're going to go to the kind of the flip I'm looking for is that when you're going to market to who you want to sell to, you want to be really good with your time. So who would you target if you're looking at, let's say, 80s product, 90s product, 2020 product? Like, where are you going to go and have the most amount of, oh yeah, I have that problem right now and I got to solve it.
Yeah. So again, because local law 157, the gas detector that put us on the map originally, everyone has to do it in New York City.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that, there may be a few that are, you know, waiting for the fines to be announced, but most people have complied or are planning to comply. So it's about then finding out who's the decision maker there, but everyone has to have a gas sensor according to the law in New York City.
Right. What I'm finding interesting about these compliance laws is that like everyone's got to do a lot of things, but like not everyone does it. And so is it because the consequence isn't published or isn't public, or they haven't actually, you know, like here's a great example, AB 2801 in California, right? You've got to take pictures of the GPS timestamp on the image for before and after. Went out May 1st or April 1st. So similar story to what you're talking about. But, you know, nobody has been, I mean, people have been litigated and fined for poor image management like a couple years ago, but nobody as it relates to this law. And so while everyone's got to be compliant on AB 2801, they don't know how to be compliant. And then the risk of not being compliant hasn't been litigated yet. So like no one's had to pay the speeding ticket, so to speak. So like in this world, is it a case that we're trying to find, you're going to try and find instances of when people need to comply, or it's like you must comply by, like what's going to create them to commit to changing?
That's a great question. First of all, I completely empathize with owners and operators, especially in, you know, states where they're more regulatory driven or regulatory trigger happy. A lot of laws have good intentions that when they end up being published, you know, they end up hurting more than helping. And more importantly, there's a lot of confusion, even in a law that sounds quote unquote simple as local law 157, pretty much says every gas appliance needs to have a gas sensor, right? But when you start digging into it, there's stuff that when they published the law originally wasn't as clear cut. Sure. So, and that's just one of them. Like every jurisdiction may have its own regulations, and we have a lot of them coming out again. A lot of them may have good intentions, but, you know, just keeping up with the discovery of them, the education of them, then how to actually implement them and to make sure that you actually implemented it correctly.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to keep up with. There's a great company out there that helps with that. It's called Site Comply. Mm-hmm. So shout out to them because it does help owners and operators across asset classes to keep up with all the regulation. But still, it's not easy.
It would be helpful to kind of like if there was like Site Comply, or even if you could do some sort of an audit on the risk impact of not compliance, right? Because like if I'm a buyer, and let's use speeding as an example, in a car, like if there's no cop on the side of the road or there's nobody around me, I'm inclined to exceed the speed limit marginally. And so like, you know, because I've de-risked the probability of being caught. Mm-hmm. So then the alternative to not complying is what? Like, how can we talk to a owner or a manager about that?
Yeah, it doesn't make it easy for us on the tech vendor side. But it's certainly, you know, stories are important, but you know, more importantly, in this case, stories that may put the building, the mm-hmm. residents and the staff at risk. Anyone that has gone through a gas shutdown knows about that nightmare. Or at least in New York City, everyone knows someone that knows someone. So it's something that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking like, so if I'm a manager, and I'm trying to figure this out too. So this is why it's kind of like...
figure this out live right now.
Yeah, let's figure it out live. Is like, I'm trying to figure out this. If someone says no to our product, right? If they say no, what's the risk of saying, of recommending no? Here's the example. Is that if a manager chooses to recommend against implementing Iris, they have a different, and then the owner would have liked the NOI impact of implementing Iris, then the manager risks losing that client. If the owner says no and the manager recommended it, then the owner has whole accountability for that. But the accountability is kind of like not as volatile as a manager being able to change. Now, the part that we're trying to figure out is that who is most able to implement? Because like the challenge that we have is that often a manager might not be willing to make the change because they don't get the NOI benefit. So it's like, it's similar to you, like, and this is kind of figure this out, right? I hope I'm not stretching too far here. Is that the benefit is the owner, right? The headache is the manager. And so like, I'm asking a manager to endure a headache of change, because all change is a headache, mm-hmm. for the benefit of their owner. And so like, we're kind of actively working on pitches right now that go to managers and go to owners, because the manager is inclined to change for different reasons than an owner. Because it turns 100%. Out managers, like on a quarter by quarter basis or month by month basis, while they should be driven by NOI improvements or de-risking the owner, they're just not. It's just not the relationship. And so, you know what I mean?
100%. Most managers that I speak to, they care. They care about their buildings. They care about their residents. They care about their clients. However, the incentives, as you rightfully pointed out, are different. Their incentives are aligned as much as possible with the owner. However, when it comes to change, like you said, you know, humans, we're like by default allergic to change. I don't know if back when we were living in the caves, you know, change meant putting our lives at risk, but you know, we still haven't evolved as much that part of our brains that is allergic to change. But incentives, when it comes to property managers, they have to, when they understand that their incentives of their owners and themselves are aligned, and if they're able to save their clients money mm-hmm. in the form of lower insurance or in the form of less resident headaches, or you know, residents leaving because there's water leaks in the building, or they weren't addressed quick enough.
Yeah,
that's when they start seeing that positive change is something good. Even though
here's another example we're working through right now is like privacy violations, right? Privacy is an interesting one, and bear with me for a second, everyone listening and you as well, is that privacy. Well, a manager is an agent for the owner. they operate under the on behalf of the owner. And so agency passes the privacy liability through to the owner.
Mm-hmm.
So similar to what you're describing, the liability for non-compliance passes through the owner. But what I hear to be consistent is that, but the manager has decision rights over implementation.
Mm-hmm.
And so privacy on data and photos, et cetera, that's a thing that the manager does, but they're not liable for. And so the inclination to change isn't as strong as if the owner was operating. And like what I'm hearing from you is a similar story. Is there similar, like kind of like complication, is that the manager, because they have decision rights on implementation, generally speaking, they are the ones that can affect the buying decision, but they don't have the liability. And so they're in a bit of a conflict because they really don't want to change that much if they don't have to, because they're humans. And so,
yeah. Managers work really hard to earn the trust their clients. So that, and rightfully so, you know, property managers and owners have been burned in the past by promises made by technology that maybe wasn't the right timing or wasn't the right solution and were not kept. So they act as gatekeepers or filter what gets presented to the owners ultimately, and to the board members. The way ProCentury, the way we address this is that, you know, we show them the math. Like if they tell us that repairing one water leak costs them X, and then they see that the entire building-wide monitoring system would be paid for itself after they are able to catch two or three of these leaks, then it's pretty a straightforward line where their client sees that they're saving the money. They're going to want to give that property manager more business.
100%. That's the tough part is that in order for that reason to acknowledge the good decision making, something bad has to happen.
If it's not broken, why fix it? I don't think that, you know, there has been that shift in mentality in our industry, but I also think that's fundamentally human. There are always bigger problems or more urgent problems to solve until it happens to us.
Like it's exciting in that you look at some of the parallel sales motions, like alarm.com or security or all these things that are prevention, like issue prevention, risk prevention. Like the sales cycle has been very successful, right? And so there's a very successful sales motion on prevention, and the buyer is well documented on who has decision rights. And then the outcome of preventing something from happening is also very celebrated, right? And so like it's interesting to kind of it'll be interesting to follow this story because like obviously leak prevention has been around for a few years, but bundling with the gas prevention in addition to the compliance around a law, because I'll ask you because you'd be the expert. Is there a compliance for leak detection law?
There isn't that I'm aware of, but. From the insurance side, it's something that insurance is heavily regulated. So I guess indirectly could be.
Even worse because it's non-litigious. It's actually just, it's a price you got to pay every single year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like if something goes, but what's exciting about your sales motion is that the sales motion for the water leak detection pre-exists with a check I've got to write every year. Mm-hmm. And then the gas piece is a compliance piece. So the add-on to the leak detection bill of materials is, now you're compliant as well. And it probably wasn't being compliant on gas might not have been a priority for you this year, but all you've got to do is add this to your units for your units anyways. Now your insurance is going to go down and you're compliant, which solves two tick boxes all at once.
That's right. A big pushback that we typically hear and, you know, I've had it myself as a resident, as an owner, is you don't want to be dealing with so many different platforms, right? Yeah. So if you're talking about risk mitigation, one platform all in one where we can add any sensor to our platform. For example, we had clients that wanted to catch mice. So we were able to add a very effective mouse catcher that doesn't have the mouse, you know, dying in the walls and showing guts and having smells. We also added exhaust fan sensors and steam traps, so we can tell buildings that, you know, before the shower gets moldy, if the exhaust fan stop working.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you have the suite of services that can solve all those prevention problems.
Yeah. So we're not married to any manufacturer per se. What we've done is we assemble typically 10-year battery powered sensors. Again, this is our most effective water leak sensor. It's not a pregnancy test, even though it's applicable. And this goes, so this is 10-year battery powered, super easy to install. Just place it under fixtures and appliances.
Yeah.
And then we notify the building staff human to human, a live operator call in English or Espanol, a text message to whoever the building wants so they can address it.
So then getting into the hell yes side of things. So the, and again, we'll just talk about detection generally speaking. What solutions, what alternatives are out there? And maybe not so much competitors, but what other ways of solving the problem are out there around detection?
Good question. I mean, I've heard buildings that they have the superintendent physically inspect each apartment once a month, which is like absolutely wild for me hear. But it's an alternative. There are some great like individual apartment sensors out there that people can buy off the shelf on Amazon. However, they're not connected to a centralized system.
Yeah.
And I've even come across buildings or individual unit owners of condos considering this solution, which has a couple of fundamental flaws. And again, these products are great for single family homes. But first, if no one is in the apartment, then some of these rely on local beeping or may send you an app notification or even a text message. But then that requires a resident to call the super to take care of it. So that, you know, our sensors are called point of leak water detection, which is exactly the insurance term. It means at the point of leak. And then we immediately notify the relevant parties that can solve that problem. So the alternatives of individual sensors, so that's a problem because they will notify.
Right. And for that would have to be like, I mean, either you're buying it sounds like you're buying a consumer product for a commercial use case.
100%.
Solves a totally different problem. Like, I mean, I can get it why I'd buy one off Amazon for my own home, but then that's not the problem. Like, that's not the insurance problem. That's the inconvenience problem.
And what happens when your neighbor upstairs doesn't get the same system? Then he gets a leak.
Yeah, exactly.
And it starts raining inside your apartment. Our platform is designed for enterprise. It's a building-wide solution.
Okay, so cool. So we got you can walk the unit every month. That's one door number one. Door number two is, you know, you can walk 300 units a month, door number one. Door number two, which is a great way to meet all your residents and understand their work schedule.
Public relations, yes.
Door number two, you can buy consumer applications, which are like not peer to enterprise. Those are peer to peer. So like notification goes to one person. It doesn't go to the command center. And so, you know, that's great for individual owners and maybe the curiosity of a renter, but not necessarily a resident, but not necessarily enterprise solutions. Or you can take a look at these enterprise solutions that are out there. Got it. Okay. So then those are the three choices. Because ultimately you're solving the insurance problem and then the compliance problem. And then when you go to market, so you reduce my insurance, which is amazing. You help me be compliant, which is amazing. But not everybody says yes. So what kind of no's do you get? What kind of objections do you get?
Yeah, and something that we should add before all the ones that you said are the repair costs. Saving on the repair costs, that's an immediate operations headache that you're able to save by catching the leaks at the earliest sign.
And it's also unplanned expense.
Exactly. Yeah. Those reserves can evaporate very quickly if you don't catch a leak in time, which is usually what happens when you don't have leak detection. Mm-hmm. So what kind of no's? Don't the best sellers say that no is just a first step to yes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of getting no's, it's if they already have a system in place, which there are not too many, or if they if they're just kicking the can down the road. I think a framework that has helped is the comparison between nice to haves versus must haves. Leak detection, you know, pro-century risk mitigation, this is not an amenity. You know, when a leak will cost you more than the entire investment in our system, you know, it's about the numbers and about peace of mind here.
Right.
Yeah, because we, you know, something that we drive is that we're not selling, you know, a piece of plastic here. We're selling peace of mind, and we're selling something cost effective that will improve your bottom line ultimately.
Asset integrity, uptime. Right.
That's right. Yeah.
And so for asset integrity and uptime, like, you know, in terms of like the insurance, there's the insurance priority of that asset. You know, who is looking to solve that? Is that the manager or is that the owner?
I would say both, and depends how well, how often they communicate between each other.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly both. I mean, the manager is the one that will suffer it, you know, on a day to day. But the owner as well, ultimately, right? When he gets the reports that an entire flood or six floors got flooded, because no one caught it.
Both feel the pain. Maybe a different way of asking the question is, who gets fired if a leak happens that could have been prevented?
Yeah, I mean, depends where you are in the country, but it's a good question. I hope no one gets fired because of this, but you know, it's certainly something that it interrupts everyone involved, and it takes over.
Because the ROI is there, so it's kind of a no-brainer. It falls in the no-brainer category, but people still don't do it because of they want to walk every single unit every single month. And so, like, someone's made it. We always have to battle this as sellers. Is like the choice of not doing anything is the most compelling, like, alternative that you've got to debunk. Like, someone who's going, it is crazy to hear that someone is going. There's someone out there in a building that is looking at every single unit every single month, like that is just, it blows my mind, given that we don't have people and open work orders are averaging 18 days open and we can't get turns done and someone's walking every single building. That sounds crazy, but someone's doing it. Someone's made that choice to operate that way. And so, like, in that building, as an example, if there's a leak, I mean, who pays the big price?
Yeah, I mean, the investor pays a big price with money, and the property manager and the resident manager will pay it with, you know, physically, emotionally, and mentally having to deal with the fallout.
Wow. When you're taking a look at the ones that say yes, do you ever kind of do a debrief with them and figure out why they ultimately said yes? Like, what was their number one choice criteria? Was it cost? Was it insurance? Was it peace of mind? Was it uptime? Why do they choose to do this?
Yeah, I mean, there's two main buckets here, and it's pretty evident, you know, since the beginning of the journey with us. The majority, it's because something bad happened.
Mm-hmm.
And a few others are being proactive, you know, and that would be the dream, you know, for everyone involved, but it's easier, and the incentives are in place to be more reactive than proactive.
So then a sales motion could be look at the restoration companies and see who their customers are.
The restoration companies, those are the only ones that I've been having trouble befriending in networking events. And I think they're great. And I think there'll always be a need for restoration companies. But when they find out that we're catching water leaks at the earliest sign, they're like, oh, you're taking us out of business. I'm like,
we have the exact same conversation. We just did a deal go to close lost because we would impact their revenue. Literally the exact same thing.
I'm like, don't worry. You go fix the mess. There's always going to be, apartments to restore.
Yeah.
But once you restore it, drop a detector there.
Well, what I was suggesting is that you go find the companies that are listed as their customers because they've obviously had a damage. Like if you're on a restoration site, 123 Restore, mm-hmm. I hope it's not a real company. And I list my list of all my good customers, 123 Building Operator. Well, then that's a company that has had a damage because they're a customer of a restoration company.
Right. Yeah. What client will be proudly, we proudly work with Restoration Experts LLC here.
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. That's a tricky one.
I mean, I know we don't see that for pest control, but maybe for restoration.
Oof, the best water bug controller in the country. We have them in our... Yeah, it's like when you're walking a property that you're going to buy or you're going to rent, you're like, oh, yeah, don't worry. We have a partnership with the best water bug and cockroach control in the country. Wait, why do you need that?
Exactly. Yeah, that's like having the best divorce lawyer.
Yep. Yeah, he's my buddy.
Excellent. So when you look back, you've had a ton of conversations on Tangent on your PropTech show. And, of course, your background in business development and in your career. You look back at either younger self version of yourself or maybe even folks that you're chatting with. What's a piece of advice do you give them?
Half of it, whatever you're doing is just showing up.
Yeah.
Really, that's half of it. So just show up, whatever is that it interests you, that you're passionate about, that is not letting you sleep at night, just show up. Keep showing up when it's raining, keep showing up when you don't feel like it. Unless you're sick, then definitely don't show up. But half of it is just showing up. And the other half is, just being constantly curious, I think.
Yep.
Trying to always be learning. Like, I think it's critical to, and some people may be naturally curious. Some other ones could be, could train that curiosity, if you will. But showing up and being curious can take you a long way.
I would... And I think ironically, to be curious, you have to show up.
They could be connected. Yes.
Right. I don't know if you can be curious without showing up.
Right.
Because the interesting thing about being curious is you've got to be willing to be wrong.
Hmm.
Right. Because you have to be willing to ask questions to clarify your presumptions, how you think your version of the world, so that you can show up better. So I think at least in my experience, there's a relationship too. And sometimes it's hard to show up, but you show up and then all of a sudden, your walk turns into a jog, turns into a run, turns into a sprint.
Mm.
It's made a commitment to show up.
Yeah. I mean, you could also have that competitive bug in you. And I think that's important to have, but more importantly, being competitive with yourself, with yourself from yesterday, with yourself from a month, a year ago. I think that can take you places.
I can totally do it. Awesome. Who should we chat with next?
On Getting to Hell Yes.
Yeah, the Getting to Hell Yes show, yeah.
You should get the author of Getting to Yes. What was his name?
Oh, yes. I know this author. I should get
there. In his honor.
That would be a good one.
Roger Fisher and William Ury. I think... I'm going to give a shout out to Yakir Saria from PowerSpot.
PowerSpot? Okay, I'll look him up. Awesome. Okay, this has been a great show. Really appreciate you coming on and sharing. I think it's difficult to talk about things that are sold in the market that fall under these kind of categories, right? Because it's like, who needs to buy it? Why they need to buy it? What's their motivation to change? What are they looking to solve for? The insurance play falls on the leak side. The compliance piece falls on the gas side. But, you know, understanding what problem they're trying to solve, like, is the owner trying to solve for compliance? Maybe not for the first 4 years of that financing, but in that fifth year of the financing, they're rushing to be compliant. And so, like, maybe, it's just for everybody who's selling into those spaces, understanding what triggers prompt the commitment to change is something we all need to discover and part of what this whole show is about. For folks that want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to connect?
Yeah, happy to connect over LinkedIn, Edward Cohen. Check ProCentury out at procentury.com. And if you want to listen to real estate and prop tech experts across housing innovation, climate tech, and the future of office, you can look us up, Tangent Prop Tech, wherever you listen.
That's Apple and Spotify?
Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else.
Very cool. Yeah, I just listened to your last show with that Slack customer service. Was it Cinco?
Cinco, Jason Griffith.
Yeah, Jason Griffith. That was a pretty cool show. Cool. All right. Well, for everyone listening today, thanks for tuning in. Appreciate your comments and adding into it. Again, if you're catching this not live, we add any comments or any questions you have. Both of us will get notifications. We'll jump on that. If you're listening on podcast, Spotify, or Apple, always hit the like and the subscribe. Those are always helpful with respect to ranking, et cetera, and helping people find the show. Thanks for everyone listening. Again, this is brought to you by IRCX, AI remote maintenance software for property management. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks, Edward, for all your conversation today. There's tons around there. And of course, be present, show up, be curious.
Thank you for having me, Guillermo.
Oh, mucho gusto.
Pura vida.
Pura vida.